Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele, and the guest joining me this time is someone who's been described as incredibly knowledgeable, friendly, and a machine. It's Mike Innes. Mike, how are you?
Hi, John. I'm also embarrassed. So that's something to add to the list. More importantly, I'm excited. This is the real deal, isn't it? We're getting onto J3.
Yeah, that's right. We covered 22 teams already in our series of J2 season previews. I think they've all been pretty well received from what I can gather. So yeah, Mike, it's time to get serious, I think, and talk about the third tier, which is kicking off in a couple of weeks' time. I think March the 14th is the date for round one. So our plan in this episode, part one of our J3 season preview, is that we're going to focus on the teams that finished pretty much in the top half of the J3 table last year. So obviously, for coronavirus reasons, nobody was relegated down from J2 last year. So we're going to be looking at the teams who finished from third down to 10th in the 2020 J3 table. We'd better get straight to it, I suppose, Mike, and talk about Nagano. But you know what? Before we do you have any sort of opening remarks? I think you did have those for J2, and it was well received. So some opening remarks about J3 before we get into it.
Yeah, sure. Why not? As with J2, John, I think that with the new J3 season, we're in for a really exciting year of football, and I think that the reason for that is because the division has been compressed in a couple of ways. First, there's the schedule. I don't mean the season has been compressed in the same way as 2020, when, as you may potentially recall, there were lots of games in a very short period of time. But it's because the division has been reduced from 18 to 15 teams, so the schedule is correspondingly shortened. So there's much less opportunity, for example, to recover from a bad start. So just to give an example to make that a bit more real, Sagamihara last season had a slow, if not actually bad, start. After 8 games, say, they were mid-table, 7 points behind Kumamoto in second. And if the 2020 season had been only 28 games long, although obviously their form improved as the season progressed, they would have run out of games. And after 28 matches, they were fourth. So a 28-game season is very unforgiving for a team wanting to win promotion. And the second reason is the division has been compressed is in terms of quality, because we've lost, in the same way as J2, we've lost the two best teams in Akita and Sagamihara, and we've also lost two of the weaker teams, Seresto and Gamba under 23, to withdrawal as planned. And only one team has come into the division. Of course, that's Miyazaki from the JFL. And overall, on the basis of those changes, I think that we're looking at a bit of a flattening out of the quality, more teams of a roughly comparable standard. So I think that overall what this means is for the season, there's less room for error, there's closer competition, there are more contenders, and I think that there are more big games. And I think, John, I'm going to ask you to name some names here. I think you can name names as to who the potential contenders are and therefore who the big games are between. So, John, if I was going to ask you, who do you think are the potential promotion winners from this batch of J3 teams? If I asked you that, what would you say?
You've turned the tables on me, Mike, but I kind of like it. So let's talk about it. I think it might be a lazy answer, but Nagano have got to be up there, haven't they? Kagoshima, I think, have a good chance. Gifu as well should be up there near the top challenging. And I also think Imabari and Toyama could be good outside bets. But I don't know how that tallies with your perception. I've left out Kumamoto, for example, because I'm not very impressed with their winter business. But what do you think?
I think we're not too far apart, but you know, there are a couple of there are a couple of differences for me. So I think that I don't think we mentioned Tottori, did you? And I think that you could make a case for them. But I think the point here is that you know there are pretty much half the division. You could make a case for them getting promoted. I think that's the main kind of point. So if that's the case, in any sort of random round of games, there's always going to be interest. There are always going to be games of significance and impact. And if you look at the first round of fixtures in a couple of weeks' time, maybe there aren't any sort of absolute humdingers, but of the teams that we've just mentioned, Imabari already meet Kumamoto, Kagoshima already meet Tottori, Nagano are already under pressure because they'll be expected to win at Sanuki, for example. So even without the interest that hopefully comes from looking in more detail at the individual teams as we're about to start doing, I think that J3 2021 has the makings of a really exciting competition, and I can't wait for the first round of games.
Mike, excellently put. What I take away from that is we can expect non-stop bangers and six pointers for the next 9 months or so. So I think, yeah, it's going to be very exciting. I also can't wait for it to get started. Maybe we should take a look at some of the teams we've already mentioned in more detail then. Mike, we'll follow a similar format to the J2 season previews, and we'll just look at the teams in the order that they finished last season in the table, and say what we want to say about each one. We've mentioned Nagano already. You said that they're going to be under pressure pretty much from the off. Obviously, we know they finished third last season. They were so close to J2. It's just that agonizing collapse, really, on the last day, wasn't it, home to Iwate, that did for them. Nagano have retained their manager, Yuji Yokoyama, for the new season. And in terms of players lost, I was taking a look at their ins and outs beforehand. Ibuki Yoshida, striker, has gone to Akita, which I think he'll be missed. They will also definitely miss Niki Urakami, the centre back who was ever present last season. He's moved on to J2 with Kofu. Plenty of interesting players have come in though, Mike. And we had a question on Nagano from a contributor at Hauki on Twitter. He asks, why does my guilty pleasure team, Nagano Parcero, continuously fail to capitalize on their amazing new arena? And why will they fail this year again? Kind of a glass half empty framing of the question there. And what is missing from Nagano? So, Mike, the floor's yours. What about Nagano Parcero for 2021?
And what it that's a thank you, John, and what a great question that is. Really gets to the heart of the matter. We've spoken before in our previews, haven't we, John, about the decisive factor holding sway over the fortune of some clubs being not so much the transfer ins and outs, the seasonal comings and goings of individual players or coaches, but more the idea of organisational culture as this unshapable, malevolent entity that remains in place and in power no matter how much effort is put into changing and affecting components of that culture. A yellow-shirted J2 team based in Chiba Prefecture are, of course, the best example of this. And indeed, in a story as old as time, or at least dating back to their first failed attempts to win promotion, it's a characteristic of theirs that gave rise to the saying that will be well known to many pod listeners: you can't un-Jeff Jeff. Which brings us to Nagano. Despite enjoying the advantages of good level of support, as Haoki says, football-specific stadium, the envy of many clubs, and the proximity of Matsumoto as the basis of rivalry and therefore interest, Nagano cannot shake off their status as probably the biggest league club never to have played in J2. So, as you said, John, Yuji Yokoyama has stayed on for another season. This is his third. 2020 was his second. And whatever it is that's stopping Nagano from fulfilling their potential, Yokoyama hasn't found a way to overcome it. looked like he had done, but at the decisive moment, they blew it. They failed. They stood powerlessly by and let a functional Sagamihara push past them to promotion. And heaven knows what condition Yokoyama and his squad are in as they face another season in J3. You touched on some of the transfers, agreed that Urakami, the centre-back, is a big one. Amazingly, all three of the goalkeepers who appeared for the first team last season have also left, all three of them. The first choice was Akihito Ozawa. It'll be interesting to see how much playing time he ends up getting at Mito. Most important newcomer, I would say, John, is probably the veteran forward Hidetaka Kanazono, who spent the last 3 years at Corfu. But I agree with the implication of Haoki's question, and I think that before we can reasonably get into the business of predicting a promotion for Nagano, I think that we need evidence that they can deal with setbacks and that their mindset has changed.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. One thing that I noticed looking at their transfers in, Mike, staying on Nagano for the moment, is most of the players coming in are from J2 clubs, aren't they? You mentioned Hidetaka Kanazono coming in from Kofu. Also up front, Shota Sakaki from Tochigi is a player that I really like. Another veteran, Masaki Miyasaka, is going to be in midfield. He's coming from Gunma as well. So they do seem to be bringing in players from a higher level in J2, but I don't know, maybe the quality of some of these players is questionable. Do you think it's the right approach to bring in these squad players from J2 teams? I notice Kento Kawata, a defender from Omi, is also joining Nagano this year. What do you make of the transfer policy in general?
Well, you know, I think this sort of like gets to the heart of the matter, really, because on paper it sounds like a pretty reasonable approach. But then, you know, on paper, the appointment of Yuji Yokoyama was absolutely the right thing to do in terms of helping the club to achieve. It has a very singular aim, doesn't it? I mean, if you are Nagano, you want to do one thing. You want to get promoted to J2. And that has been the case ever since. Ever since they arrived in J3, you know, they are well set up to achieve that promotion, and every single season they've messed up in some way or other. And so, as a means of dealing with that issue, the appointment of Yuji Yokoyama is on paper, absolutely correct and appropriate, because he's done what they're trying to do. He got Tochigi promoted from J3 to J2. He has direct transferable experience of that situation. But what he hasn't been able to do is to change the mentality and to change the kind of fragility which always seems to have impacted so negatively on the team, and which we saw having such dramatic consequences at the end of last year. But so, yeah, to me, I don't know. It doesn't feel so much as about matters to do with individual players as about an overall team kind of mindset.
Yeah, maybe that loops back nicely to Hauke's question of what is missing. Then it's a winning mentality or a mindset for the squad, for the club, that can get them promoted into J2. It's going to be really interesting to see how they do, Mike. I think it's a strong squad on paper, isn't it? But then again, Nagano have a strong squad on paper every year, as you're alluding to, and it sometimes always seems to go wrong somehow. So yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see how they do in the first few rounds before we can make any conclusions. Let's move on and talk about last season's fourth place finishers, Mike. Kagoshima. They're kind of a sneaky fourth place finisher in a sense, because they won their last five games in a row to kind of shoot up the table from sort of in the middle, didn't they? They've changed their manager, and they've made a very interesting appointment. The Australian Arthur Pappas, who is a disciple or certainly has a lot of connections to Ange Postecoglou, the Yokohama Marinos boss, has worked with him in the past. And they haven't really moved that much in the transfer market in terms of ins and outs, which is quite interesting. So, Mike, what about Kagoshima, under new leadership in the form of Arthur Pappas?
The changes are being rung at Kagoshima, aren't they? Pappas is a guy with a really interesting career. He coached at state and A-League level in Australia. He's coached in the I-League and with the under-23 national team in India and in the top division in Saudi Arabia. He moved to Marinos 2 years ago. And he joined the coaching staff under Ange Postecoglou and Peter Klimovsky. And last season, following Klimovsky's departure for Shimizu, he was appointed Postecoglou's head coach. And it's from that position that he's moved to the perhaps unlikely surroundings of J3 and Kagoshima. Kim Jong-song, he had Kagoshima playing a pretty straight 4-4-2 last year. But, of course, Postecoglou at Marinos has the reputation of being a real innovator in terms of tactics and formations. So it will be very interesting indeed to see what sorts of ideas Pappas brings with him, especially in the light of Klimovsky's disappointing record at Shimizu. I think that Kagoshima deserve a lot of credit for making an appointment like this, especially as one imagines that they have pretty specific targets in mind as a potential promotion candidate. It seems very unlikely to me that a team would rise up the table and finish fourth and then not have an eye on promotion the following year. And in the sort of season launch event, video that was posted on YouTube, Pappas was talking about the alignment in terms of ambition that he and the club had. So one assumes that it's his intention and the club's intention to gain promotion. I don't know what you think about the ins and outs, the transfer dealings that have gone on, but my overall sense, John, is that these sorts of arrangements can take time to click. Time is not something that there is a lot of in a 28-game season. So consequently, I'd be very cautious of predicting a higher final placing for Kagoshima than they achieved last year, but obviously a club to watch with interest in 2021.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting. I totally agree with what you're saying about the project. I think there's definitely, Arthur Pappas has been brought in for a specific reason, even if it's something as simple as Kagoshima saying we would like to replicate the style of football, not at the same intensity probably, because the level is different and the quality of players that are available to be coached is different, but something more innovative like the Marinos style might be what they're tasking Arthur Pappas with. With that in mind, though, it's kind of surprising that more players haven't come in to the squad to kind of facilitate that. I see Osamu Henry Ioha, the defender who was, I think, on loan at Gifu last year, has come in. They've also added another defender in the form of a Brazilian Gerson, who's played in numerous countries and seems to be something of a veteran. His experience could be very useful. In terms of players going out, they seem to have lost a little bit of power up front with João Gabriel moving to Tochigi City. I think possibly he was on loan there already, making it permanent. Kenji Baba, who's very old but also very useful, last year's retired. One of my personal favourites, the kind of all-action box-to-box midfielder, Nildo, is also not had his contract renewed. I think he's a surprising miss, and he'll be missed during the season. I think for me, I think we've probably talked about this already on other shows, or perhaps I discussed it with Stu, but there is a kind of natural break at the halfway point in J3 this year for the summer, I imagine that a lot of teams will be taking stock of their relative situation at that point. I think Kagoshima will be one of those. I think if they're in fourth place, you know, at that point, or things have been going well, then I think they'll be happy to continue. But if not, then maybe they'll reassess their situation. I hope Arthur Pappas gets time, because he's been brought in with a very specific, you know, role, if you like, a specific job to do. I don't think it's about just getting results straight away, but I don't think we should kid ourselves. We are talking about professional football, you know, professional sport environment. There will be a limit to how much time any manager would get, wouldn't there, in the same situation. So I think the midpoint of the season is where we might see some kind of vote of confidence in Arthur Pappas from Kagoshima's front office, or hopefully not. I don't want to see that, but maybe a change if things haven't gone well. And yeah, you mentioned kind of only 28 games. I mean, compared to last season, where the players were sort of playing three games quite often in a week, perhaps the extra time on the training ground will benefit Kagoshima. My gut feeling is I think they'll probably start quite slowly for the reasons that we've outlined, but get stronger as the season goes on. Probably after that summer break, you might find that they click into gear. That's it's just my feeling, but yes, I think you might be right, and maybe higher than fourth is certainly not a given, is it? It's going to be difficult for them to do it, but I think maybe they can. Arthur Pappas comes, as you said, very, very highly rated. There are some good players at the club already, as we know, even though they haven't been that active in terms of transfers. So yeah, fingers crossed, it's interesting and exciting, if nothing else. Mike, talking about interesting, exciting football, we should mention Tottori, I think, Gainare Tottori. They finished in fifth place last year, which was enough for their manager, Riki Takagi, to be given the same job again for 2021. Yeah, I'm not sure. They seem to have been quite active transfer-wise in terms of players coming in and one or two important players going out as well. Tell me about Tottori. What are you thinking? I think you're feeling quite bullish about their chances from what I gather.
Yeah, a bullish makes it sound a little bit, perhaps a little bit more sort of exciting than is actually my sense with them. In my notes include the word stability and also respectable if unspectacular. So this is to do with you know, the club's overall sense of development under Takagi. This is his third year in charge, but I think that a team like Tottori may approach 2021 thinking that a small improvement, sort of quiet progress on the results that Takagi has achieved over the last couple of years, may actually turn out to be enough to get them back to J2. His most significant accomplishment to date has been to improve the defence. They conceded 22 fewer goals last year than they had done in 2019. No major sort of tactical modifications which helped bring about that change, but they have kept on the goalkeeper, two of the three main defenders, and the only significant player in this part of the team to leave is Rikito Inoue, who, as we mentioned in the previous pod, has gone to Okayama. And elsewhere, the main departure is actually a graduate of your local school of YSCC, John. That's Naoto Misawa. He's an all-action sort of central midfielder type, very good at set pieces. Two, he's moved to Kyoto, and in actual fact, he scored in their game against Sagamihara. You know, a very, very positive debut for him. I think that Takagi has given himself options rather than sign players who will sort of clearly slot into those positions. Perhaps no big sort of star names, but there are several sort of central midfielders, centre backs on the list. For example, Junya Suzuki from Gunma, Tomoki Taniguchi from Numazu, One for Stuart and Richie is Yushi Nagashima from Gifu. But overall, yeah, I don't think that teams are going to have to improve enormously to do well. Consistency, stability are good characteristics to possess. And weighing up the circumstances of other possible contenders, for example, Nagano and Kagoshima, I think Tottori could be in contention for promotion this year.
You think Tottori might be able to fly under the radar with a little bit less pressure than Nagano or Kagoshima, for example?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it because, you know, there's clear attention going to be paid to Nagano and Kagoshima. And Tottori, you know, maybe not the most exciting team in the world, but they're heading in the right direction under Takagi. And maybe they can carry on doing that and sneak into the top two.
Yeah, I think that's very, very stoutly reasoned, and I tend to agree. My main excitement with Tottori is always checking to see which of their two stadiums they're playing at on any given weekend, whether it's the Axis Stadium or the Torigin Bird Stadium. They might have different names by now, I don't know. They sort of alternate between those two stadiums quite a lot, don't they? I think it's a shame that we won't be seeing Fernandinho anymore. Obviously, he's enjoying a well-earned retirement now, but it was good to see him being more involved than you'd expect a sort of 39-year-old to be last season, popping up with quite a few cameos and goals. Obviously, a J-League legend. Yeah, my notes are pretty similar, to be honest, Micah. I've written probably similar to 2020. And then in brackets, I'm not sure there's enough quality to be in the top two in the squad. But I think, as you mentioned, it might be a season where stability and organisation, a la Sagamihara perhaps, from last year, if we want to draw a comparison from last season, could be enough to get them right up there in the thick of things. I mentioned two other players that Tottori have brought in who I'm really keen to see. I'm not sure how much playing time they'll get, but they're both on loan from J1. It's Daichi Akiyama, who I think is a defensive central midfielder, or a Boranchi. I'm interested in seeing him a little bit further forward, possibly, although I admit that I'm freestyling a little bit here, is it Koki Harada, a midfielder who's on loan from Kawasaki. Now, we know what a strong team Kawasaki are. They don't tend to have midfielders on their books who are not useful for very long. So I'm really looking forward to seeing those two, if they get to play together, how much game time they get. They're obviously not household names. They're not well known. They could be a secret weapon, I think, in the midfield for Tottori. And as you mentioned, now Tomisawa is quite a big loss moving on to Kyoto in J2. So yeah, I think the centre of the midfield for Tottori is where I'm going to be taking a close look in the first few games of the season. Let's talk about one more side before we take a quick recording break. Mike, and I think it's the one that Stu and Richie will be eagerly anticipating. FC Gifu finishing sixth in J3 in 2020. They're under new management. Takeyoshi Anma is the man in the hot seat at Nagaragawa for the start of the season, at least. Quite a whole host of players coming in and out. I wasn't sure which ones were the main ones, so I listed them pretty much in full in my notes. What do you think about Gifu, Takeyoshi Anma, and the business that they've done in the winter transfer window?
Gifu, they had a bit of an inconsistent 2020, didn't they? Didn't they, John? They had good away wins against Tottori, Kagoshima, Toyama, Kumamoto, but there were just too many occasions when Gifu couldn't come good in important games. So Kenji Nakada, who ended up as the coach in the latter part of the season, he's reverted to his previous role on the coaching staff. And as you've said, Takeyoshi Anma has come in as the man in charge. He, over the last 5 years, has done various coaching jobs at FC Tokyo. Key departures look to me Core Yanagisawa, he can play either side of fullback, and he's gone to Mito. And the sort of the veteran forward Hiroyuki Takasaki who scored 8 in 18 starts last year. He's gone to Saigon FC, one of the top teams in Vietnam. So how about the incomers? There are two goalkeepers to challenge. Takuya Matsumoto, who in the middle of last season blundered so badly in the game against his former club Akita that he never played a game for the rest of the season. So Kazushige Kirihata comes on loan from Kashiwa. Cholhwan Ono signs from Chiba. There's a veteran defender, Tetsuya Funatsu from Gunma. And also potentially interesting, Ryohei Yoshihama, who's played in a range of midfield roles at Yamaguchi. Had a really good 2019, but lots of injuries last year. They've kept on important players. Centre-back Kentaro Kai, creative midfielder Shohei Aihara, and somebody who I've described as appallingly coiffured top scorer, Shota Kawanishi, makes permanent his loan from Oita. So what does all this mean? I think in the context of a division from which the two best teams and also the under-23 teams have left means that Gifu have as good a chance of anyone as anyone of gaining promotion to J2. I do think that. But as Stuart has pointed out in one of the closed season pods, there's very little wiggle room. And for Gifu, this means that their first, for example, three away fixtures are important ways into the season. Those first three away games are against Fujieda, Tottori, and Toyama. Most or all of those are promotion eligible teams. And if Gifu can pick up a decent number of points from those games, I think they will be set up to do well.
Yeah, I think that's good analysis. Just to read out a line from my notes, which chimes with that, I've written top two is possible if absolutely everything goes perfectly. So perhaps those first three away games will be a good test for that. Yeah, I think I also wanted to mention one other transfer, which I think is potentially important. Takuya Honda, the veteran kind of anchor in midfield. I think he's 35 years of age, coming in from Yamagata. I think if he is fit, for the majority of the season, he could exert a very positive, calming influence in the midfield. Sometimes Gifu are a little bit panicky, a little bit skittish, I felt, in games. So we'll see if he can exert a sort of calming influence on that aspect of their play. What about the manager, Takeyoshi Amma, Mike? Because I know you mentioned he's done a lot of work with these sort of youth teams at FC Tokyo. I don't think his record, to me as a layman, is not that impressive. Is it a bit of an underwhelming appointment, do you think, or am I being too harsh?
I didn't make any notes about the stuff that he's done previous to being at FC Tokyo, to be honest with you, John. And as you know, my brain is so sort of overwhelmed by this stuff that I can't bring this sort of bring any details about him previously to mind. What other sort of stuff has he done?
So his coaching career. He's had spells at Kofu as the number one, and 5 years at Toyama from 2010 to 2014.
Yes. That does ring a bell. Yeah,
yeah, and then he was the coach of FC Tokyo's under-23s. Then briefly FC Tokyo. He was in charge of the first team for 9 matches. Alarmingly, one win, 4 draws, 4 defeats. And then he was back in charge of the under-23s in 2018. But to be honest, in terms of league positions, there's not much to get excited about here. I think with Kofu, he managed 7th and 4th in J2. With Toyama, 18th, 16th, 19th, 18th and 22nd in J2. Wrong direction of travel there, one would suggest. And then, yeah, he's had spells in charge of FC Tokyo's under-23s as well, as mentioned. So I think maybe my initial analysis of being underwhelmed was born of ignorance, but upon closer inspection, I stand uncorrected. I think it's a bit of In contrast to the appointment of Arthur Pappas at Kagoshima, for example, it's a little bit uninspiring for me. I don't know.
I think that, those are all good points. I think that there are a number of interesting coaching appointments that aren't within J3 this close season. Generally, aren't there? And this is but one of them.
Yeah, all very interesting stuff. And of course, we wait to be proved wrong. I mean, everybody deserves a shot, I suppose, if they've got their experience and got their coaching badges. So I hope it does work out. And big name managers don't always lead to good results, do they? So we'll have to wait and see. Okay, Mike, I think at that point we should probably take a quick recording break. So grab some refreshments. We'll take a quick comfort break, and we'll be back to talk about some more J3 teams in just a moment. Okay, everyone, we're back after a short recording comfort break. Mike, you're still with us. We can talk about some more of last season's top half J3 finishes now. And it's one that I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on coming up next. Imabari, described, I think, by Stu as the most important team in J3 last season in terms of how they settled in after promotion from the JFL. I think they did pretty well, didn't they? Finish in seventh under their Spanish manager, Luis Plaganuma, who's back again for 2021. How do you feel about Imabari going into the new season, Mike?
Well, I think that overall, last season, their approach paid off, didn't it? They brought in a lot of ready-made, experienced, professional players. They had a very busy time in the transfer market 12 months ago. And they made a team that was very difficult to beat, always competitive, but maybe lacking a little bit of flair. So moving into their second J3 season, how can they take things forward? So the answer to that question seems to be by consolidation. Not surprisingly, the coach stayed at the club, and his squad is unchanged to a pretty remarkable extent. There are several fringe players who've gone to non-league, two to the Kanto League, and three to the JFL. The main departure, as we mentioned in the J2 previews, is Masamichi Hayashi, who's the top scorer in 2020. He's gone to Yamagata. But those kind of veteran internationals, Komano and Hashimoto, and pretty much everyone else from the first team last year, they've stayed on. Imabari are drawing a lot on incoming players from universities and high schools, and it looks like they are effectively treating Leo Mineiro as the player to take Hayashi's position in the team, and I think he will be very important. He actually joined from Okayama midway through last season, but almost immediately picked up an injury in training, which caused him to be out for 6 weeks. Now, he came back to score 3 in 9 starts, and I think that Imabari will be looking to him for goals this year. A target of 10 for the season looks doable, even with the shortened fixture list. And overall, John, I think that promotion might be a little bit too far for Imabari, but it would surprise me quite a lot if they didn't improve on last season's seventh place.
Yeah, I think there are some echoes of Tottori in terms of slow and steady progress being on the agenda for Imabari, aren't there? I think my notes resonate very strongly with yours. I've written that they'll badly miss Masamichi Hayashi, but they could still be in with an outside shot of promotion, in my view. I've also written there's probably not enough goals in the team at the moment, but almost eerily similar to your comments. I've written Leo Mineiro could be the key man, and I think a lot depends on him staying fit. Obviously, he had that bad injury that ruled him out for a spell last year, as you mentioned. We should comment on his hairstyle as well, which is just as impressive as some of his footballer kind of the sort of Ronaldo wedge from 2002, but just with a lot more volume. Very, something that I can only dream of at this stage. In terms of other players coming in, there's definitely a kind of profile of player, I think, like Koichi Miao, who was captain at YSCC last year, has come in. And a player that I don't know much about, but is interesting, is Toshiki Toya, a striker who's come in on loan from Fukuoka as well. But I tend to agree with you, Mike. I think steady progress from Mabari, and probably just not quite enough in terms of goals to get them much higher up the table or into the top two. Yeah, but it was very enjoyable watching them at times last year. So hopefully it'll be something similar in 2021 as well. One team that will be aiming at the top two for sure, and I'm not confident how successful they'll be, is last season's pretty disappointing eighth place finishers, Mike. Kumamoto, they've retained their manager, Takeshi Oki, for 2021, which I personally think is a little bit surprising, and I think he's perhaps quite lucky to be continuing after some of the disappointing performances from last year. What do we think about Kumamoto? We had a question from Sam Robson, our good friend at FR Soccer Sam on Twitter. Three key players in the form of Ishikawa, Nakahara and Taniguchi have all left. So have Kumamoto done enough to replace them and build a squad capable of challenging for promotion? What do we think about Kumamoto, Mike?
Yeah, they underwent a pretty remarkable downturn, didn't they, in the second half of last season. And I think that on the basis of that and their transfer activity, they look to me like there are concerns across the pitch for Takeshi Oki. On the one hand, his team's defensive flakiness was pretty painfully exposed in that period from late September through to the end of the season. So 29 goals conceded in 17 games. That's bottom six form. And then, as Sam has described, their left back, Hiroto Ishikawa, he's gone back to Tosu at the end of a loan spell. But two of the attacking stars of the team have moved on, as discussed previously, Taniguchi to Niigata and Nakahara to Yamagata. And those two players together represent getting on for half of last season's goals for tally, walking out the door. Coming into the club are just two players from other J League teams. I'm happy to let you talk about Yuya Sato, John, coming in from Chiba to create some competition with Kei Uchiyama in goal. And there's Taisuke Mizuno, who plays an advanced central midfield role. He's from Fujieda. But thinking about the problems that became apparent during the course of last season, coupled with those important players who left, it's difficult for me to understand what Oki might be doing in terms of signing those two players. Everyone else who's coming into the club for the new season is from university or high school. Inevitably, we have to expect that some of them will be blooded in the first team. As, for example, Toshiki Takahashi, their centre-forward, was last season, to some success. But there's only one nominated forward amongst these new young players. So who knows? Perhaps we could be talking during the season about the goal-scoring exploits of 18-year-old Aiki Miyahara, who's from Otsu High School. I appreciate that Kumamoto are one of the biggest clubs in the division, if not the biggest. But if you put together these four characteristics: one, wobbly defence; two, departure of two key goal-scoring players; three, arrival of two players who don't seem to fit into any sort of plan; and four, arrival of university and high school players who are difficult to assess, I think it's hard to state with confidence that Kumamoto are going to challenge for promotion this year.
Yeah, I'd echo those sentiments, to be honest. I think it's something that we touched on when we talked about the bottom half of J2, especially in our J2 previews. You're kind of looking at a team and comparing them from 2020 to see if they're stronger or weaker or about the same. I think in Kumamoto's case, it's pretty clear that they are a weaker squad than last season for the reasons that you've mentioned. I mean, Yuya Sato, the goalkeeper, you know, if last season's big problem was a shaky defence for the entire second half of the campaign, I'm not sure how Yuya Sato coming in is going to help you in that respect. Yes, he's a good shot stopper and saves a lot of penalties, but his overall play is frankly horrifying. So I'm not really sure why you would move out a solid pair of hands like Kaito Yamamoto, who's the goalkeeper who's gone to Fukushima, and bring in Yuya Sato. So yeah, that one to me is a head scratcher. I will just as a counterpoint mention that they have been able to keep a player that I really like, because he scored a lot of goals for YSCC, Hayato Asakawa, who was kind of a super sub for a lot of last season, you know, coming off the bench. I'm sure he's going to, I mean, as you mentioned, they've only brought in one forward in the off-season, and he's a high school student. So Hayato Asakawa surely going to get more game time this season. It's always really fun watching him play. But yeah, it just looks like a weaker squad. Doesn't it? The direction of travel was downward in the second half of last season, and I don't really see that the business that they've done is going to help them to really arrest that. So Sam, have Kumamoto done enough to build a squad to challenge for promotion? No, I don't think so. They might be in the top four, but I don't think they'll make it into the top two this year. Yeah, I'm trying to think of more positives, but yeah, Hayato Asakawa is like the only one I've got. And Yuya Sato will do something funny at some point if he gets game time. That could be a positive, depending on how invested you are emotionally in Kumamoto winning football matches, I suppose. How about the ninth place team from 2020, Mike? It's Katare Toyama. They have a new manager in charge for this season, but it's a familiar face in many respects, isn't it? Nobuhiro Ishizaki. He's new to Toyama for this season, but he's spent the last 3 years at Fujieda, where he led them to 16th place, 3rd place and 10th place finishes, respectively. As you'd expect with a new manager coming in, there's been a lot of transfer business, especially new players coming into the club. What are we thinking about Toyama?
Yeah, it's been a really busy off-season there, hasn't it? They were pretty disappointing last year, ninth place finish, and the coach from 2020, Adachi, who's moved on to Rhein-Meier Aomori in the JFL. Ishizaki is obviously a very experienced campaigner. I counted, and I think that Toyama are the ninth J-League club that he has coached. There's been a lot of transfer activity around the change in the appointment of Ishizaki, including three players moving to Toyama who were with him at Fujieda last year. The most striking of those is Tsubasa Yoshihira, a very eye-catching player, very promising young striker. Although Toyama will need him to do well after three important players have moved on. That's Hayato Otani, who got off to a very decent start, put in a good performance for Kanazawa over the weekend. Shu Hiramatsu has gone to Sagamihara, and Hayate Take has gone to Akita. But I think that Yoshihira could do well, especially in combination with Shaw Hanai, who's a bit of a playmaker. And there's another new signing, Junior Osaki. He's a skillful little player from Tochigi. He's got quite a lot of experience, especially from Tokushima, and I think could be quite a big hit in J3. A couple of older players too. There's a Kyoto central midfielder, centre back Masato Kurogi. That's a name that will be familiar to Nagasaki supporters. And Ishizaki has made the captain 40-year-old goalkeeper Yohei Nishibe, who's come from Shimizu. I think that although Toyama have lost some good attacking players, if the players that I've mentioned stay fit, I think that that's every reason to believe that Toyama can challenge for promotion. Maybe not top two, but certainly top four.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I wasn't feeling many positive vibes about Toyama at all until I started serious preparation for this preview pod, Mike. And I've ended up with coming to the very similar conclusion. My notes say that they're a good outside bet for a top two challenge. And yeah, personally, having looked at their transfers and the business that they've done, I think they could be close. I think you're right to highlight Tsubasa Yoshihira, the striker who is obviously well known to the manager Ishizaki from Fujieda. I was amazed to read that he's 23 years old. I thought he was a lot older than that. You know, he plays with a lot more kind of maturity, or he seems like a lot more experienced than a 23-year-old player. And I'll mention just one more of the incomers for Toyama this year, Shoma Otoizumi, who is a sort of quick and skillful winger from YSCC. I seem to be only kind of pointing out YSCC players on this podcast. It could be, must just be a coincidence. But yeah, I think the idea of Yoshihira up front in the middle and Junya Osaki and Shoma Otoizumi kind of buzzing around him is actually quite tantalising. And I think in a season where, as we've outlined, there are question marks about quite a few of the other sort of promotion contenders, in inverted commas, I think if things click for Toyama, and they have a manager who certainly knows the division very well, doesn't he, it could go right. I think I'm expecting to see a big improvement from ninth place last season, and it could even be top two if everything goes well. But I also accept that losing Hiramatsu, Take, Otani, all three of those players leaving in the same transfer window is pretty damaging. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing how things go. And I think Toyama will definitely be exciting to watch, if nothing else, this year. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Okay, Mike, how about the team that Ishizaki left then? Fujieda My FC, they finished in 10th place in J3 last year. Obviously, they have a new man in charge for 2021. It's Yasuharu Kurata. He's the new manager. Quite a few players in and out, you know, as you'd expect when a new manager comes in charge. What have you noticed about Fujieda's transfer business, and how do you see them doing this season?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting one, John. So, and I've still sort of organised my notes in a bit of a different way from normal. I've got three things to say about Fujieda. Number one, I don't trust the coach. Yasuharu Kurata, unusual career history, peppered with spells doing different youth coaching jobs in China. And similarly, he's had backroom positions at Fukuoka and Kobe. But the experience he does have of being the main man at a J-League club, his record is not good. He was coach at Gifu in 2010, took them to 14th in J2, rattling in 32 goals in 36 games along the way. Then in 2015, he took over mid-season at Tochigi and won two of his 18 games in charge. Not surprisingly, Tochigi finished bottom of J2 and were relegated. Yasuharu Kurata looks like one of those guys you call when you've run out of ideas. Second thing to say, he's building an old team. In my notes, I have lists of key players under the headings retained, arrivals and departures. They don't include everyone, just the players that I think are most interesting or important. Of the players on the retained and arrivals lists, Takuya Miyamoto is the youngest and he's 27. More than half of them are 31 or older. Third thing to say about Fujieda. Weirdly, there are potentially a lot of goals in this team. They've brought in from YSCC the aforementioned Miyamoto, who had an amazing season and really looked like a guy who's found his level and his confidence to go with it. For a struggling team, he scored 14 goals. By coincidence, the same number as Tsugatoshi Oishi, who is on Fujieda's retained list, as is the battering ram of Yasuhito Morishima. They can score goals. These are guys who know how to find the net. Overall, I've no idea what you get when you put these three things together, but I think that, for me, Kurata's record means that there's no way that I can confidently say that Fujieda might be a dark horse. No, not for me.
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost as if we plan these things out in advance, Mike. But my notes here, just to read verbatim, very interesting signings, but underwhelming manager, I've written. I anticipate a slight improvement, but not enough to get them and you know, into the top five or into the promotion places. So yeah, I echo your thoughts about Kurata. I mean, it's kind of similar to Mr. Amma at FC Gifu, in that I'm open minded and, you know, I want these guys to do well, but it's hard to look at the record and be too impressed. You know, your socks aren't blown off, are they, by a year at Gifu and a year at Tochigi, and that his spell at Tochigi was six years ago. Yeah, the only other player I'm kind of curious about that we haven't really touched on is a Brazilian goalkeeper who's come from Tokyo 23 FC, which that's I think that's, is that in the Kanto League? It's not a JFL team. So I mean, Brazilian goalkeepers kind of a rarity in the J League in general. Brazilian goalkeeper coming from what is essentially non-league into J3, even more intriguing. And yeah, I also wanted to echo your points about kind of that engine room of the midfield looks like it could be quite slow if you factor in Yudai Iwama, a veteran who's coming from Tochigi, but also Jun Suzuki, a dead ball specialist, but also advancing in years, who's coming from Fukuoka. So yeah, I think the plan is, it seems to me, to get the ball forward very quickly and hope that these exciting forwards can do the business. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, I'm not anticipating any kind of serious promotion challenge from Fujieda at this point. Maybe a slight improvement from 2020, but not much. Okay, Mike. Well, I think we gave a pretty good account of the kind of top eight, if you like, from last season's J3 table. I'll throw it over to you for some kind of closing comments now for part one of our J3 season preview. With that in mind, though, I just want to throw in a question from Richie Palmer at Gifu Richie on Twitter, who makes a very salient point. Four teams are going to be relegated from J2 into J3, you know, this year. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on teams to be promoted this season, as we've kind of talked about already. This is kind of a great chance, isn't it, for teams to get into J2 before the kind of trapdoor opens and four strong teams are kind of thrown into J3. So yeah, which teams do we think are going to be feeling the most pressure, and which might be stuck in J3 like a certain team from Chiba Prefecture that plays in yellow are in J2 if they get things wrong and fail this year? I suppose the obvious answer is Nagano, but what do you think about Rich's question, Mike, and some closing comments on part one of the season preview in general?
Yeah, I think Rich's question is a really great one. And, you know, sort of conversely, we've got this situation whereby, you know, the lack of relegation from last year has implications for this season. But then, you know, things go completely crazy kind of next time, because as you've said, four additional teams come down into the higher division. So, you know, I think that this has the potential to play into the hands of a team like, for example, Tottori, as we talked about, because if you just remove the top two teams from last season, well, you know, all of a sudden, Tottori are third. You know, they're the third best remaining team in the division. But clearly, it doesn't work exactly like that. But it's a starting point for them. So I think that the easiest thing to do in terms of answering Richie's question is to consider of the sort of contenders that we were talking about right at the top of the pod, John. Which do we feel really can be ruled out from being promoted? So for me, that list is Nagano, Kagoshima, and Kumamoto. I don't think that those teams will get promoted. clearly for very contrasting reasons. So Nagano, on the basis that it just feels as if the club, don't have that kind of mental strength to organise themselves, and I want to see evidence that they've developed that. Kagoshima, because although it's very laudable, the appointment of Pappas, I think it'll take time to get right, and time is not something that they have a lot of this year. And Kumamoto, because the way that they came out of 2020 and the way that they've prepared for 2021 in terms of their transfers doesn't give me confidence that Takeshi Oki has built a promotion-winning squad. So if you rule out those three teams, clearly they have a possible chance. It's only a theory. But if you rule out those three teams, then that means, I think that, realistically, you're probably looking at teams like Toyama, Gifu, and Tottori, potentially Imabari if everything goes right. And those are the sort of competitive teams. But looking ahead to the next pod, equally, I think that there is a lot of interest in terms of how some of the lower the teams that finish lower down the table, how they can prepare to develop, because I think there's a bit of a mixed economy in terms of life in J3. There's quite a big gap between the top half and the bottom half of the table, and I'm interested to see if some teams can start to bridge that gap in terms of their development. Clearly, that's a point that we'll pick up on in the second of the J3 review preview pods.
Yes, skillfully done, Mike. You were able to kind of round off part one, but also tease part two, all in the space of answering Gifu Rich's question. So, yeah, thanks for that. Basically, in part two, of our J3 season preview, we're just going to look at the rest of the teams in the table, right? So everybody that finished kind of 10th, well, 11th or lower in the 2020 standings. So hopefully that'll be coming up soon. I think Nagano is a really tricky one, Mike. I know we talked about them right at the top of the show, so it kind of seems appropriate to end by mentioning them as well. I mean, I think everything that's been said on as a negative in terms of kind of mentality, it is very true, but there is just a lot of quality in the squad for me as well. So it's kind of difficult to, it's difficult for me to bet against them, if you like. I still think they're going to be there or thereabouts, even if I agree with you, more evidence is needed that they've got over some of the kind of mental problems. But I think it's only the mental side which is a barrier for them this year. I think in terms of squad depth and quality, they are probably one of the two best teams. It's just that mental side that where the question marks are, isn't it? And I think on the other hand, from what we've talked about in this episode, I think the takeaway is it's going to be wide open. I mean, there are six or seven teams who your mind wouldn't be blown to see them in the top two. I think, and Sagamihara is still kind of fresh in my mind for last season. I think even at the midway point, as you mentioned, it would have been faintly ludicrous to suggest that they were gonna snatch the second spot, and they did it. So that kind of made me reassess the top half of the table. And I think we could see almost any of these sides challenging. I think the only two that I'd rule out right now would be Kumamoto, because of the reasons we mentioned with the transfers, and also Fujieda, I don't think look very convincing on paper. But the other six teams that we discussed, yeah, wouldn't surprise me to see any of those, any combination of those as the top two. Okay, Mike. Well, I think we'll leave it here for part one. Hope everybody enjoyed hearing your thoughts on those eight teams from the top half of last season's J3, and we'll be back again for part two soon, where we'll talk about the rest of last season's J3 teams and how we think they're going to do in 2021. But yeah, Mike, where can people catch up with you on Twitter if they want more content?
Thanks, John. Yes, I'm at GoGoOmiaRDJ.
Fantastic. Okay. Yes. So hopefully, people will check you out on Twitter as well, Mike. And thanks as always. Everyone who downloads and listens, we really appreciate the support and the positive feedback. And yeah, if you're a patron supporter, you back us with cold hard cash. Obviously, we really appreciate that as well. So thanks for that. We don't take it lightly, and we really appreciate it. So yeah, I think that's all for our part one J3 season preview. And yeah, hope everybody enjoys the football. J League is back and banging for J1 and J2 at least. And yeah, we'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now. We'll be right back.